shops on Friday, and I start having me a ball. Cause I got a good feeling, and I don't feel no pain at all. Right in my day.
Hey, good evening, truth seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Yeah, it is Friday. Friday's my day to play. Hope you're going to hang out with us for a while tonight. By the way, a friend of mine, I want you to do me a favor. This is strictly a favor, all right? This is strictly just a favor. A friend of mine has a video up at YouTube. It's kind of weird. It's called Art and the A-Bomb. I want you to check it out. Just go to YouTube.com and type in Art and the A-Bomb. Art and the A-Bomb. And take a look at it. You know, when you have a chance. It runs about 9 minutes. But then put some feedback. You know, in those little boxes there where you can type stuff in? Put some feedback. All right? Art and the A-Bomb. At YouTube.com. Dave in Tampa emailed in and said, I hope you plan to spend some time tonight on the New Hampshire primary fiasco. Actually, we kind of have broached that subject earlier in the week, Dave. He goes on to say, as you know, Dennis Kucinich has requested a recount and is soliciting donations to help pay for it. On the Republican side, presidential candidate Albert Howard has requested a recount. Dave writes, I think this is the most important story going right now. Confidence in our voting system was already low enough before New Hampshire. If people lose confidence in our electoral system, they will not bother to vote. Thanks, Dave. You can get a lot of information about this at bradblog.com and at various places around the Internet that are non-mainstream because nobody wants to touch this story. Nobody wants to touch this story. I have been kind of following some of the commentary on the Internet that any challenge, apparently, to this New Hampshire primary vote is seen as a challenge to Hillary Clinton, that somehow it's disrespecting her. I beg to differ, certainly not from my perspective. It is not. It is an affirmation that the system better work, or let's just chunk the system and forget about it. Let's just have the United States Senate appoint our president. Let's do away with this nonsense. I think it is a fact beyond a reasonable doubt. In other words, not with a preponderance of evidence, but beyond a reasonable doubt. In other words, it would stand up in a criminal case that these voting machines don't work, can be easily manipulated, and have, in fact, over the last three or four elections, altered the outcomes of various races, including the presidential race. So a request for which Kucinich is entitled to for a recount. I think he has to put up $4,000 or $6,000 or something. A request for a recount, a hand recount, is I think is required given the weird, funky results of what happened in New Hampshire on Tuesday night. This is no disrespect to Hillary Clinton's ability to close. You know, if she's a good closer, she's a good closer. If a lot of people decided at the last moment there was, in some instances, there was as much as a 20% change in what people were telling pollsters prior to the vote. But more seriously is how the vote totals, as tabulated by these lousy-ass machines, how the vote totals totally differed from the exit polling. Why would someone lie? Requested to do an exit interview, why would someone stand there and lie? Say, I voted for candidate X when they actually voted for candidate Y. This is exactly what happened in Ohio. Exactly what happened in Ohio that cost Kerry the election. The exit polling indicated that Kerry had won. When the votes were counted, Kerry had lost. So, anyone who takes offense at a demand or a request or a conversation about a recount, or anyone who is offended or takes it as an insult against Hillary Clinton because there is conversation that says, wait a second, every single race worked out? Within some of them right on, some of them within the margins of error, except the Obama-Clinton race. So, you know, I'll be curious to see what happens. As far as your humble and obedient servant here, I'm not taking any position on it right now because I don't know. I have no idea. The reason I had Brad blog, I called Brad the other night when this story first broke on his website and said, come on, you've got to come on and talk about this. He doesn't know. I don't know. Who in the hell knows anymore? So the vote count, the recount, that requested by Kucinich, interesting, the only person, again, who will make an effort to try to preserve democracy is Dennis Kucinich. I mean, this is crazy. He's the only one that attempts to get these rat bastards impeached. He's the only one screaming for, not screaming, but demanding that the democratic process, insofar as the voting machines are concerned and how we tabulate our votes, actually works. Gee, what a radical idea. Kucinich. In that regard, an email from Pam, who writes, Mike, I'm a former volunteer precinct inspector for the L.A. County Board of Elections. I've worked at polling stations in Malibu for the past 6 years. My first year as an inspector was 2004. My experience was quite enlightening. As Brad indicated, each election, many ballots are invalidated. 20% is not outlandish if you consider and understand the process that leads to a completed valid ballot, especially with an election that has a heavy turnout. 20%? Jesus. Now, let me digress from her email for a second. The spirit of the law, if not the law itself, would indicate that, you know, this was a big deal with the pregnant chads and the hanging chads in Florida in 2000. If they weren't punched all the way through, well, obviously, invalidate the ballot, which is bat's not. If it's a clear indication of what the person wanted to do, the vote should be counted. If there's any doubt, the doubt should fall not toward, but away from the intent of the voter. And I remember, I'm sure you remember those god-awful videos from 8 years ago with these bug-eyed freaks sitting down in the precincts, in the election precincts in Florida, holding them up. Well, what is that? Is that a pregnant chat? Well, what was meant by that? Do you think that? This is, that, you know, that was so deliberately fake and phony and false. But I digress. Pam writes, my recommendation to any listener is that they volunteer this election season, familiarize themselves with the process, participate, and witness the counting of ballots at day's end. You will have ample input to make an informed decision about the validity of the process. She writes, Brad makes a cogent argument for transparency. I encourage all listeners to participate in fostering that that effort. We all win when the process is free and fair. Pam, and her last name. That's an idea. You know, when I go to, you know, I may do it over here at my precinct. Every time I go over here to vote, and I've voted in the same place for what, Kathy? Five elections now, four elections. I don't know. We both have voted there. And every time I go over there, there's this clutch of old people sitting there who are the election observers or they do the, you know, make sure you're logged in right. Let me see your ID, yada, yada, yada. You never see middle-aged people. You never see young people. Okay, so they're at work. Not necessarily, not with the unemployment in this area, around 5, 6%. So I just wonder why more people don't participate. I also wonder why donuts have holes in the middle. Starbucks? Oh, my God. I used to drink Starbucks coffee until, and sometimes I still do when I'm out and about, although I try to find the individual, especially here in Atlanta. There are a lot of Eritrean-owned coffee shops, Eritrean and Somalian people who have opened coffee shops. Every once in a while, I'm forced now because there's nothing available or I don't know where it is to go to Starbucks. No, nothing against Starbucks except it's just corporate behemoth. Here we go again. Now, at home, of course, I wouldn't touch the stuff. I drink superbeans.com coffee until it's coming out of my ears. Bob Alexander's website. If you haven't been there, check it out, superbeans.com. And buy some! I'm sitting here right now. That's why I'm so cranked. Here it is, 9:16 in the evening in the east, and I'm just, just scorfing down some of this Kona coffee. Where was I? Oh, yeah, Starbucks. We'll be back in a minute. Well, a little bit longer in a minute. Stick around, because I got something to say about Starbucks. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Against right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Okay, so I'm picking on Starbucks, which is, I'm late to that party, right? I've seen the bumper stickers, friends don't let friends drink at Starbucks or whatever. But here's the story to me. Starbucks is the Walmart of the coffee industry. In more ways than one, Starbucks managers have been monitoring internet chat rooms and eavesdropping on conversations in a covert campaign to identify employees agitating for union representation. Now, this story comes from the Independent of the UK. It doesn't come from the New York Times. It doesn't come from the LA Times. Maybe it's in those stories, but the emails reveal that Starbucks spied on its own staff who are looking to establish a union. According to the UK, Independent of the UK, the correspondence has come to light after a long-running legal battle between the company and a union angry at being prevented from organizing among Starbucks' 150,000 army of baristas and other employees. That to me just absolutely sucks, doesn't it? Starbucks, or any company, in this instance it's Starbucks, union representation. Ooh, watch out, here come the devil! All right, Starbucks, I'll tell you what, from me to you, those few times that I will be out and about, and normally would go to your store, to hell with you. I can't stand that. I just can't stand that. Spying on people's private conversation. Well, okay, they're on the internet, they're in chat rooms, they're not private. But spying on employees in this manner, why not just set up a camera in the John? So in case, you know, when somebody goes in to pee, you know, they make it on their cell phone and say, hey, about that union organizing thing, right? Huh? Why don't you do that, Starbucks? Spy on them when they're peeing. Man, I hate it. What else we have? We've got a couple of updates here on the Dennis Kucinich recount demand. Have you noticed that NBC dropped him off the debate as soon as he did that? There is a problem. Nancy Toby, I guess is her name. She's the New Hampshire Election Integrity Advocate, whatever that means. And I'm not trying to be a smartass. I don't know what it means. An Election Integrity Advocate, all right? She says the following, quote, "We have no control over the ballot chain of custody, and we have learned the pain from the 2004 Nader recount, in which only 11 districts were counted, chosen by a highly questionable person, and then nothing showed up. Now, all we hear is how the Nader recount validated the machines," end quote. Yeah, that, I remember that. Ms. Toby adds, "A candidate asking for a recount, like Kucinich's, may well be a tool used to, quote, prove, end quote, everything was okay, and then that candidate will be further discredited, end quote. So the only way, my emailer has here, the only way a recount makes any sense at all in New Hampshire is after an assessment is made of the chain of custody issues. If the chain of custody isn't intact, the recount won't be worth a cup of warm spit. And all that means is, what happened to the program or the results that came off the voting program from the time the polls closed? Now, I would say from prior to the polls opening, what happens when the machines were loaded? Somebody run a check on the program prior to the first vote being counted. And then where did the disks or whatever, however it's recorded, where did they go when the polls closed? Who had access? Were they tampered with? Were they opened up? Who looked at them? So I tend to agree here with the thought that Kucinich might be walking into the Nader trap, where a question is raised, the question is answered by the criminals who control everything. All they have to do is just say, oh, you want to recount? Okay, here. So what has been proven? If the chain of custody is not of those vote totals is not followed through on, who had access to it? And I would go one step further, unless this is what they mean in chain of custody. I would say, how were those machines, you know, who put the program in? Who unlocked them so the voting could begin? Who locked them when the voting was over? And where did the ballot counting mechanism or program go after that? Jeez, you know, don't you hate this? I mean, don't you feel that it's everything has to be a struggle. Everything has to be a struggle. Why does it have to be a struggle? Well, you know the answer to that as well as I do, because we're in the end times where it concerns the Constitution of the United States. We are. We're in the end times. And I hate that term, but that's where we are. The Bush crime family, starting with the Reagan, starting with the Nixon crime family, and working up to the present time, along with corporate America, they have one goal and one goal only, to get rid of this, as Bush called it, goddamn piece of paper that keeps getting in everyone's way, the U.S. Constitution. Corporations can't work with that. Dictatorial little twits in the White House can't work with that. So that's why it's important, because we're in the end times. Hi. All right, we'll be back after the break. Stay with us, because I've got more for you in the Straits of Hormuz. I got a couple of emails here that are astonishingly interesting, so stay with me. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Tonight, how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
Uh, 25 before the hour. This is from Vote Count 08. Dear Mike, something is really bothering me here. Here it is. We know the recount of votes in New Hampshire will neither prove nor disprove the nagging suspicions and well-founded conclusions that, A, there may have been and may continue to be tampering with votes either cast, handled, or counted electronically, and, B, machines are inherently unreliable and clearly unverifiable when no paper trail is present. Further, C, optical scan machines with paper ballots provide no comfort of accuracy when there is great resistance to actually counting those ballots. If they are thrown in boxes, whatever the chain of custody, and there is no standard for handling or precedent for a built-in audit procedure, it offers little comfort that our votes are being recorded and aggregated to the candidate of our choice. So, if New Hampshire is used as a test case for the accuracy of these machines, or the necessity of future audits, we have a big problem. A recount that confirms the accuracy of the results could actually be used as cover for the next major fraud in November, or in future primary states. So what do? We must audit as a matter of course, not as a matter of suspicion. It must be a built-in safeguard in every election to randomly audit 15-20% of precincts with a hand count, and also offer to any candidate the option to audit a specific precinct of location. Then, and only then, should we even consider the option of machine voting over 100% paper ballots hand-counted and verified by two sets of human eyes. That's my take as we embark upon the next media attempt to pigeonhole us as a group of lunatic conspiracy theorists. It scares the hell out of me that we are only asking for an audit of one state primary as opposed to all primaries. Let the Democrats be the standard bearers of common sense here, not those whistling past their own graveyards. Yeah, I just hate the fact that we have to deal with this. The sons of bitches, but they being a corporate, the corporatists, the neocons, the new fascists, the Bush crime family, the Republican Party, the conservatives, they have latched on to Stalin's dictum about, well, the only thing that's important is who counts the votes. Doesn't make any difference how the vote is conducted or who runs. To the Straits of Hormuz, this is from someone who I have a suspicion is in the Navy. And he or she writes, well, it's a he named Paul. Hello. Thought I would send along some procedures and observations of a commercial tanker officer that has transited the Strait of Hormuz en route to the refinery at Ras Tanura and cargo port of Daman, Saudi Arabia. Have been through the normal communications that happens during transits while on the bridge. Well, maybe he's talking about himself. He says the second soundtrack between the Iranian naval craft was legit. The second one. The normal procedure when entering territorial waters of another nation is to communicate one's call sign. In other words, this is WJAR, the tanker Atlantic Fury. The call sign beginning with W or K indicates American registry. This is followed by International Maritime Organization numbers. This provides all data about the vessel. The Iranians or Dutch or whoever the national governing agency will then ask destination and so forth. It is a civil procedure which is observed by all nations. This is not a challenge to one's sovereignty, but simply keeping track of who is who in their waters. Many of the Iranians who would be in their late 30s were trained at Massachusetts and Maine maritime academies in the United States. Most of them at Maine, since it was somewhat more hospitable than Mass Maritime. The hostility toward the Iranians was not because they were Iranian, but rather because they had money, cars, and dates with the local girls, and several attempts to drop pallets of cargo on them by the American cadets during training. It was determined, after several attempts, it was determined that Maine would be a safer place. None of the Iranians ever talked in the, "I'm going to kill you!" Actually, they were at least bilingual and well-spoken. As for the ridiculous little blue boats that they were zipping around in, those were obviously put into the water by another vessel. They did not have the room aboard to carry weapons, nor the fuel capacity to run from shore at the speed they were supposedly traveling. Of course the film was blurred. Surprise, surprise. Also, what could be seen of the faces aboard the blue boats were considerably lighter complected than the average Iranian. I have never seen any pirates or threatening maritime types wearing certified international life jackets and survival gear. These type of people have other priorities. I seriously doubt that the Iranians know anything about the blue speedboats, since this entire sea movie was probably filmed at another location. With the sea conditions at the time, those boats would have been picked up on 3-centimeter radar at about 7 miles. Paul. Yeah, see, so much of this that you and I don't even consider. The Americans claimed it was international water. That is how far from the coast of Iran. I have no idea. The Strait of Hormuz is a rather narrow, relatively speaking, bottleneck that comes out of, what is it, the Arabian Sea into the Indian Ocean, into whatever. But you know where it is. It's right there on the horn of Saudi Arabia. But it was clear to me. Wasn't it clear to you? Although it just didn't register. Little tiny boats like that? Zipping around in the middle of the ocean? Wait a second. No. Blew right by me. The little blue boats. And my writer's comment here about wearing certified international life jackets and survival gear. Yeah. I am going to kill you. I'm coming to you. Oh, my God. And now we have high-ranking naval officers offering up their comments like, oh, okay. The first audio apparently came from somewhere else. We reported that last night. Now, here's another one. This is Bill from Ottawa, Canada, who writes, hi, Mike. I know it's, he wrote this last night. I know it's too late for tonight, but I wanted to tell you there's a good discussion about this over at Salon. Check out what Glenn Greenwald is saying about the Hormuz attack. The official story, as usual, is ridiculous. The Iranians have Soviet and Chinese hypersonic missiles. These anti-ship missiles are unstoppable. At Mach 2.9, the Russian Mosquite sea-skimming missile can take out a carrier on kinetic energy alone. If they want a war with America, it's guaranteed that it will open up with the almost certainty of a nuclear carrier and many capital ships. These missiles, the Onyx, the Sunburn, and the Chinese Silkworm, are nasty buggers, Mike, and nothing you guys have can stop them. Nothing. And then he gives me a link to check out some of the videos to see what the Iranians have, and the link is, it's pretty creepy. He goes on, so it's doubtful that the opening salvo, at least not the real one, will come in the form of an Iranian speedboat attack. And there will be an opening salvo, and it will be fired by the Cheney faction or his proxies in Israel. So that will be the new Pearl Harbor they need to get their war going again. Remember the Stennis will be the new battle cry, and America's Burgermeister Rudy will jump 20 points in the polls. Honestly, they don't even need for something real to get it going, Mike. They could simulate the whole thing. Yes, it stinks, but in the end it may not matter. It's just another cartoonish psychodrama for the Limbaugh crowd. Remember the hunt for Dr. Germ in Iraq? None of this stuff is meant to hold up to scrutiny, Mike. They don't care anymore. They want to attack Iran. Kick it all off for the final battle between good and evil. This is just the beginning, I think. They don't have much time left. November's approaching fast, and after it's over, who cares if there really were babies ripped from their incubators? So have a look, Mike, at Glenn's article at Salon. He always provokes a furious and vast response in the letter section. Yeah, the babies from incubators reference, of course, is to what we were told by, you remember that got us into Gulf War I back in, what, 91? Was it 90, 91? That was the PR firm in D.C. that brought over a poor Kuwaiti woman who said the Iraqis were coming into prenatal nurseries and hospitals and throwing babies in incubators on the floor. And then, of course, it turned out that the woman making the charge was a member of the royal family. And it was a total lie. A total lie. Oh, my God. At truthout.org, there is a rather lengthy article. I'll leave it up to you if you want to go check it out. Not all that long, but truthout.org, it talks, the head is the official version of naval incident starts to unravel, and it does indeed. This whole thing is just astonishing to me. Five little speedboats blowing around inside a naval convoy, steaming across the Persian Gulf, Straits of Hormuz. I'm coming to you! I am coming to you! Oh, Jesus. All right, another break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Oh, so true.
Justice and the American Way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. I want to mention again, a friend of mine has got a video up at youtube.com. I want you to check it out. It's called Art and the A-Bomb. as in Atom Bomb, Art and the A-Bomb, Art and the A-Bomb. Check it out. And, you know, put a critique it. Put a little note in that box and post it. Art and the A-Bomb, that's how you find it. Go to YouTube.com. I love this sentence. Ask corporate lobbyists which presidential contender is most feared by their clients. And the answer is almost always the same. Democrat John Edwards. You know, this everybody knows before Edwards got into politics, he made a lot of money as a trial lawyer. You know, a trial lawyer. That's like a homosexual. That's like a liberal. A trial lawyer. An abortion doctor. And a trial lawyer scared the bejesus out of corporate thugs. They're always bringing lawsuits against companies on behalf of aggrieved individuals and or class action lawsuits. And sometimes they win multi-million-dollar settlements. Edwards won several of those. But he... I'm sure you're aware that his tone and his language on the campaign trail is strictly anti-corporate America. He talks about corporate greed. He warns about the destruction of the middle class. All this stuff is going on. I mean, it's like John Edwards is standing out there screaming at us, water's wet, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, oh my God, water's wet, when the wind blows, if you're outside, you can feel it on your skin. I mean, come on, the destruction of the middle class, corporate greed, yeah, but people respond to that as though there's something wrong with Edwards. He accuses lobbyists of corrupting the government, yeah. He says Americans lack universal health care because of drug companies and insurance companies and their lobbyists. Yeah. Oh, my God. A campaign spokesman for Edwards, Eric Schultz, says, quote, once he is president, the interests of middle class families will never again take a back seat to corporate greed in Washington. And then this rat bastard, and I'm really starting to not like this guy even more than I decided I didn't like him after he folded his tent and snuck into the night after the 2004 theft, presidential election theft. And I'm talking about Senator Kerry, who just, you know, we're not stopping, every vote's counted, you lying bastard. You didn't do anything. It was up to independent organizations to file lawsuits in Ohio. You didn't do anything. And that pissed Edwards off. And he let Kerry know it. So how did Kerry respond? Well, to hell with you. I'm going to endorse somebody else. Who? Let me see. Eeny, meeny. I know. I'll endorse Barack Obama. To you, Mr. Smarty Pants Edwards. What a twit. What an absolute twit, Edwards. I mean, Kerry, for picking on Edwards, for doing that. Edwards is being pushed as an anti-business populist, a trade protectionist who is quite unabashed about raising taxes. Yeah, on the people that need to have their taxes raised. Corporate America and the rich bastards. What's wrong with that? Also, his regulatory policies would be viewed as a threat to business. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Edie in Alabama writes, Mike, like most, I've been paying attention, special attention, to the election cycle. And I've noticed some, sometimes subtle, changes in the rhetoric of the two frontrunners. The forgotten man in all this is John Edwards. But many of his populist ideas are now being echoed by Obama and Clinton. The lazy, sold-out media has ignored Edwards, or if he's mentioned at all, they doubt his sincerity. You know, they take the tack. How can a multimillionaire claim to care about the less fortunate? Oh, for God's sake. Edie goes on, well, Edwards was not born to wealth. He's a walking Horatio Alger story, something that was once admired in this country. Of course, that was before the greed is good crowd took over the world, like the Reagan Democrats before them. Too many seem to be attracted to the shiny and the new, or this year's pose. Edie, Dogpatch, Alabama. Dogpatch. Yeah, I'm leaning towards Clinton. I can't get my mind straight tonight. I'm leaning towards Edwards. I've got this Clinton-Obama thing on my mind, too. The New Hampshire primary. And the obvious... what's the word I'm looking for? Deception. That's the starting point. Involved in those god-awful tapes from the Straits of Hormuz, right on the eve of Bush's little jaunt to follow in Jesus' footsteps. I was listening to ABC News tonight and heard that Bush went to the Sea of Galilee, where in Christian mythology, Jesus walked on the water. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, because Bush has been going around to all these holy places, Christian holy places, and... you know, because he's such a wonderful Christian and truly follows the teachings of Jesus as they are alleged to be, especially Bush's treatment of children. Huh? But anyway, when I'm listening to ABC tonight, talking about Bush went to the Sea of Galilee where Jesus walked on the water, I kept thinking, yeah. Please go out about half mile offshore. Please. And just step out of the boat. You can do it, George. You can do it. You're Jesus' brother. Just go ahead, George. Get out there on the Sea of Galilee and just step out of the boat. Don't worry. If you got the faith, you're going to be okay. If you feel, you're healed. I swear to God, Jesus, step out there. Jesus is with you, George. Step on the water. Step on the water. Go ahead. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Mike Malloy program on Nova M Radio Network. Thank you for just tuning in or sticking around. It is our Friday night program. I'm a little less hysterical on Friday nights, although, you know, you never know what's going to happen on this program. That's for sure. The other night, last night, I think, I got a phone call from a guy who said he had actually done a 180 on his political point of view. Went from being a hardcore conservative to liberal, progressive, whatever. And we chatted for a moment, and after the call, I started tripping out on what it was like back in the day when I can remember common folk sitting on their front porch swings back in the 50s, talking about, you know, this one was Democrat, that one was Republican, and how there wasn't that much difference, and everybody was just trying to get along. I thought about it today, and I thought, you know, that may have been true on the front porch level, but where it concerned politics in this country, where it concerned conservatives and Republicans, mostly conservatives, conservatives should be a filthy word. It should be right up there with the F-bomb. Because conservatives have done everything they possibly could since before the beginning of this country to screw everything up. And I want to give you a couple examples here, all right? Bear with me. To begin with, these conservatives supported George III in the American Revolution. A third of the population of the colonies didn't even want independence. They supported protection for the institution of slavery in the Constitutional Convention. That's what they wanted. They supported nullification, which said that states didn't have to enforce federal laws they didn't like. Sound familiar? They support a repeal of the Missouri Compromise, which would have allowed slavery in places like Nebraska and the deserts in New Mexico. They opposed the Transcontinental Railroad because it might encourage small farmers who owned no slaves to settle in Western territories. A contemporary conservative pundit, Joseph Sobran, has dressed up opposition to this as a principled stand against big government proponents like, are you ready, Henry Clay and Abraham Lincoln. Oh, here's the seventh thing. They opposed the Homestead Act. The conservatives did. Number eight, they opposed freedom of speech for Southern opponents of slavery. It seems the institution of slavery became so sacred, the conservative Southern planters made it a crime to speak out against it. Before the 14th Amendment, freedom of speech was not required of the states. The ninth thing, they declared, contrary to Jefferson's dictum that all men are created equal, they declared that the black man has no rights, the white man is bound to respect. That was the Dred Scott versus Sanford case, perhaps the single worst opinion in the history of the U.S. Supreme Court. 10. The conservatives supported destruction of the Union rather than allowing Congress to so much as restrict slavery to places where it already existed. 11. They opposed the earliest civil rights legislation to enforce the 14th and 15th Amendments. 12. Obstructed, intimidated, and harassed newly freed slaves who attempted to exercise their federal civil rights, including the right to vote. 13. They opposed preserving the Union. Northern cheap labor conservatives, not surprisingly, either actively or tacitly supported Southern secession. Did you know that? This should not surprise us, since Northern manufacturers were discovering the wonders of wage slavery and didn't necessarily have a problem with the Southern version of property slavery. Don't forget, the perfect situation in the capitalist system is the owner class, the ruling class, and slaves. Number 14, supported a monometal currency standard. This policy is what William Jennings Bryan referred to in his famous Cross of Gold speech. Little remembered or understood today, this policy led to a deflation that began shortly after 1873 and lasted for a generation. And that condemned Southern and Western farmers to poverty that lasted until Roosevelt's New Deal in the 30s. Number 15, conservatives supported the violent suppression of early efforts of industrial workers to unionize. They supported the acquisition of foreign colonies in the wake of the Spanish-American War. How many times have we talked about that on this program? They supported the arms suppression of Filipino independence. They opposed antitrust legislation. They opposed child labor laws. They opposed universal free public education. Some of them still do. They opposed literacy for African American citizens in particular. They supported the legal theory of separate but equal. They supported the establishment of Jim Crow laws in the South. They opposed state laws guaranteeing minimum wages and restricting working hours for industrial workers. They opposed the right to vote for women. They supported prohibition. They opposed the League of Nations and continue to oppose U.S. participation in the UN. They opposed agricultural subsidies. They opposed the Tennessee Valley Authority. They opposed rural electrification. They opposed Social Security. They opposed the Fair Labor Standards Act that established the 8-hour workday and overtime pay. They opposed the National Labor Relations Act guaranteeing workers the right to collectively bargain. They opposed U.S. entry into World War II to fight fascism. They traded with the Nazis during the war. Noteworthy cheap labor conservatives trading with the enemy included Henry Ford and, Prescott Bush. They opposed the GI Bill of Rights. They opposed the creation of the UN. They opposed the Marshall Plan. They opposed FHA mortgages. They opposed the creation of interstate highways. They had to be renamed the National Defense Interstate Highway System to get some of these right-wing nutballs to go along. They opposed the Civil Rights Act of 1957. They opposed the Civil Rights Act of 1964. They opposed the Voting Rights Act of 1965. They opposed Medicare. They supported both overt and covert intervention leading to the creation of right-wing dictatorships in Iran, Guatemala, Cuba, before Castro, Nicaragua, the Dominican Republic, the Congo, Chile, Brazil, El Salvador, the Philippines, Indonesia, and on and on and on. They supported the war in Vietnam, including bombing them back to the Stone Age. They supported covert and illegal airstrikes against Cambodia. They supported domestic surveillance of opponents of that war. They supported domestic surveillance of civil rights supporters and other so-called dissidents who believed in things like equality and democracy. They opposed the Clean Air and Clean Water Acts. They opposed the Equal Rights Amendment. They supported shifting the tax burden from the top to the middle and the creation of massive deficits for the purpose of bankrupting the federal government. They opposed the act creating family leave, unpaid family leave, mind you. They opposed and continue to oppose national health insurance. They support taxing the wages of working people, but not passive investment income, such as dividends and so-called capital gains. They support vouchers to subsidize parochial and private schools in order to create a two-tiered educational system. Now remember, they opposed universal public education. They support the free trade policies that allow U.S. manufacturers to export jobs to third world cesspools. They support the dictatorial regimes in those same third world cesspools. They oppose restrictions on greenhouse gases and other pollutants. They support the privatization of Social Security, something they've hated since its inception. They oppose government support for the development of alternatives to fossil fuels, but they do support the invasion of Middle East countries like Iraq in order to secure our supply of those same fossil fuels. This is a short list. So the next time some cheesy-ass conservative wants to figuratively or literally wave his flag and boast of his patriotism and starts braying about American values, remind him of some of the stuff I just shared with you, okay? And there's more. There's more. There's much more. I've quoted many times Clint Gold, the former mayor of, it was in the Tulsa newspaper. He was former mayor of a small town in Oklahoma. What has the GOP done for workers? And the actual answer is not a damn thing ever. So anyone who has converted to, who has come around to correct thinking, where it concerns their own life, to get away from conservatism, get away from these rat bastards, good for you. More power to you.
A form of suicide.
Republican side!
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. All right, sure. Let's do some phone calls. All right, you want to do some phone calls? Yeah, that's why they call it talk radio, Malloy. Let's start with our Aurora, Illinois bureau chief, Marianne, who is forced to listen via the internet. Hey, Marianne.
Hey there, Mike. You know, you were talking earlier about the vote count in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Well, I remember distinctly, you know, after about a day of mourning in November of 2004, we started talking about that, and I sort of came to the conclusion that that wasn't the Ohio debacle wasn't the first time an election had been kind of tampered with. that year. Because I watched as John Kerry, literally, like, you know, 2 weeks before New Hampshire, came out of single digits and ended up winning.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, you know, that would have could have been explained if he were some relatively unknown quantity getting attention for the first time, but people in New Hampshire sure as hell knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
yeah.
So, you know, you don't know. And I think that in terms of, you know, what do we do about it because you feel kind of hopeless, well, our good friend Randy Rhodes just keeps saying the same thing. You have to show up. Well, first of all, I have to show up and vote.
Yeah.
In huge numbers that it makes it harder and harder to steal. The second thing, you have to show up as a poll watcher or as an election judge.
Right.
And I've been both over in the 14th district here. And, you know, I actually think Illinois, having had a long history of vote tampering, I think they finally got it right. Because I don't think there was any discrepancy between the exit polls.
Well, you know, this is where the distinction comes in, though, I believe, in Illinois, and I know what you're talking about, especially Cook County, that is voter fraud. But the bigger issue now is election fraud.
No, I'm talking about election fraud. The procedures, at least in our district, were fairly transparent. Mm-hmm. When I was election judge, we hand-counted ballots on chats, and then we were taking very careful count of people putting optically scanned ballots into the machine. That I did not like to see the Diebold machine there.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was no big discrepancy between any of the exit polling and the final results. But you just have to, I think somebody or you said it earlier, you can't just wait until something pops up. You have to insist, as a matter of course, that we're going to have an audit. And that
should be part of the procedure. Well, let me ask you, and I need a fairly quick answer, Marianne. What's your take on the Obama-Clinton results?
Well, my take on it, and here is someone who does not like Hillary Clinton's on her own merits. But the night before, when I was listening to the commentary about her, it made my skin crawl.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, yeah, this is a misogynist society.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, like, you know, the ideal woman is 20 years old with perfect skin and not a whole lot to say.
Iron my shirts. What about that bit? Iron my shirts.
So a lot of the polling did not catch that last 24 hours. And, you know, whatever, I have no idea. Women crying do not affect me, but that might have had an effect. I remember feeling glad that Obama didn't win that particular one. I'm personally backing Edwards because he's the most populous, but I didn't. I also didn't want a coronation too soon.
Right. I certainly understand that. So, in your opinion, then nothing untoward happened?
There might have been stuff happening around the edges. Look, I assume that if it's stealable, it's probably stolen.
It's probably stolen.
And you just have to be showing up and looking out for it. And also, you know, getting people out in big numbers like they apparently did in 2006, they couldn't, you know, it was big enough numbers for people wanting change that they really couldn't steal it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hate to think that voting strategy now has to incorporate the idea that the machine I'm voting on is fraudulent. So therefore, not only do I have to vote, but I have to make sure that 20 other people vote with me.
Well, now, I think it's a little broader than that. I think, you know, people got the idea that most things run on autopilot in this our political system. So people for a long time haven't really been politically active. And, you know, when you have a long time with people not looking and not, and you know, our voting, our primary voting turnout has been very pathetic.
Oh, it's awful. I used to say at WLS back in the day in Chicago, if the reason things are screwed up is because the American people at some place along the line said, to hell with it, I'm not going to vote, it's raining today.
Yeah, well, I think as a symptom of that, it's the money thing that has completely taken over both parties.
Yeah.
So it's not just the vote fraud, the election fraud.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that the Democratic leadership goes around looking not for the most representative candidate in the district, but the person that has the most money.
Hey, I got to go. Marianne,
okay.
Always good to hear from you. Listen, before I want you to do me a favor, since you're a nuclear physicist, I want you to go to youtube.com and take a look at Art and the A-Bomb. And then just drop me an email. Tell me what you think. Art and the A-Bomb. It's at YouTube.com, okay?
Will do.
All right. Thanks, Marianne. Take
Bye-bye.
Care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Because life's too short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Phone calls. Howard is listening on Sirius Satellite Radio, calling from South Bend, Indiana. Hey, Howard.
Hey there, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Great. You know, I was listening to you last night. We were talking about the Navy ships that were being harassed.
Uh-huh.
And the we gonna kill you.
Right.
And today I was at work, and one of my friends kept saying, "Shut up, I'm gonna kill you." And Jeff Dunman, who is a comedian, who has the jalapeno on a stick, also has a little Middle Eastern man that says, "Shut up, I'm gonna kill you." And I'm wondering if it's just one of our little American men on board the ship that was able to get to a bullhorn or a whatever, thought it would be funny to go, "We're going to kill you."
I think that's probably very close to what happened. Just some clown in the U.S. Navy added that bit. Now, that's the best-case scenario, that these naval ships were being buzzed by five little blue speedboats. The best case scenario is that actually occurred, and the sailors, U.S. sailors, thought it was a joke and said, "I'm coming to you." Now, the worst case scenario is what one of my emailers suggested earlier tonight, that the whole thing is a sham. It's just an absolute bunch of garbage.
I would believe that.
Given this administration, so would I. You know, I would hate to think that... Oh, God. I know a lot of people are going to laugh at me about this. I would hate to think that the U.S. military would involve... Oh, never mind. I shouldn't even go there. But
I've been there for 4 years, and you know, I was thinking about how old people are. I was 18 when I went in. And
yeah.
Add on 4 more years. You add on 4 more years. You're 38, 42 years old. You're still a young punk.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that last bit. What now? Say it again.
I'm saying as you add on the years, you get up 42, 48
right.
years old, still in the military, you're still a young punk.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah. Well, I again, the whole thing stinks. I hope it turns out, I hope whoever did this... it gets exposed. I'm sure that somewhere up the chain of command in the United States Navy, there are more than half a dozen people now who know where that "I'm coming to you" voice came from. And they're either trying to decide whether or not to laugh it off, even though it might have started World War III, or cashier this punk and throw his ass out of the Navy. You know, given the tension that George W. Bush has created with the Iranians, and given the fact that Israel is just champing at the bit to launch a nuclear strike against Israel, and Bush is now saying, "Yeah, I'll go along with that." Given all that, anybody in the Navy who drops something like "I'm coming to you" into what is purported to be a tape of a serious harassment of U.S. naval ships, although what the hell are we doing there to begin with, yada yada, anyone who does a joke like that given these times ought to have his ass thrown out of the Navy.
I agree with that.
You know, what's this guy's job on board that ship? What is he supposed to do? Is he in control of any of the weapons? Does that ship carry missiles? If so, has he got the codes? You see what I'm saying?
Well,
no time for clowns. Oh, my God. Anyway, Howard, thanks, man. Thanks for checking in, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right, take care. We'll talk again. Alan is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Are they actually carrying the program tonight on WINZ? Hey, Alan. Oh, geez. Put him on hold. We'll come back to him. Alan probably went to the bathroom or something. Jeremy is calling from Huntington Beach, California. Hey, Jeremy.
Oh, hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's clicking right along.
Yeah. Well, I never have anything new to add, as always. I just want to remind people, you know.
What are you making?
What am I making?
Yeah, it sounds like you're making something.
No, there's some interference on my phone. Who knows? NSA, probably.
Oh, I thought maybe you were making hamburger patties or a birdhouse or something.
Yeah.
No? No. Okay. All right.
We like to see everything as blue versus red. I say, you know, we need to throw that out the window. It's always been about old money versus everyone else, you know, from the very beginning. You know, like Madison believed that people were too stupid to decide for themselves. So he just designed a constitutional system to sort of keep a majority of the people out of the decision-making process.
Sure, fair.
You know, that's where all this comes from, you know, and it doesn't matter whether they're Democrats or Republicans from day one, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
John Kerry is just another skull and bones, high and mighty rich. What do you expect from people like Clinton or, you know, Obama for that matter? Or, you know, Kerry or any of these people, they believe their job is to protect old money. Now, when the public gets so outraged that they go to the streets and they're afraid that, you know, that the peace is actually going to be disturbed, then they'll do something. But you name me one single, you know, social change that's made that Congress just woke up and decided, hey, let's grant the black people the votes, or let's grant women vote, or... you know, let's have equality, let's integrate. It's always been a struggle. It's always been an absolute struggle. People have to take to the streets. Congress they're more like good cop, bad cop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're there to keep the peace. They're not there to do the people's will. We're supposed to believe that, but that's the BS matrix, you know?
Sure, sure.
So you just have to remind people that, you know, when the media actually takes John Edwards and, you know, it's always, you know, it was kind of a surprise that he came in second. I didn't see any mainstream media... you hardly mentioned John Edwards. It was all, even after he came in second in Iowa, it was Clinton, Obama. Clinton, Obama. They completely ignored him.
Yeah, that's what the sick, corrupt media want. They want to see a mano a mano. They're fascinated. First time a woman has come this close. First time an American with some African descent has come this close. And it's just like, I don't know, it's like the Orange Bowl or it's like a hockey game. And I get the impression that most of these media bastards, I can't wait till this Sunday. I want to see how media whore number one, Tim Russert, he's going to have Hillary Clinton on for his whole hour of filth on NBC. I want to watch, I've got to watch this and see how he treats Hillary. In terms of the questions he asks her, in terms of the responses that she gives in his follow-up questions, I've got to watch this. Now, television knows that I've got to watch it. That's one of the reasons they do it. They know that so many of us out here are going, oh, geez, you know, I hate this, but I'm going to watch. It's like going by a train wreck or a car wreck. You know, you take a look. But... this is what media want. They don't want to put John Edwards and Dennis Kucinich and any of these people. Oh, hell, okay. Even Ron Paul. They don't want to give these people any kind of full-blown coverage because they are not on the same page as corporate America. Hillary and Obama are.
Why would the media support something? I mean, you know who they're owned by. I mean, they're owned by... I mean, it's just the wealth is insane. But... why would they support people who support ideas that are destructive to their very existence?
Yeah,
the media, we can't expect the media to actually include all debate. That's insane. I mean, why would they do that? I mean, if people were to point out that they're actually parasites, you know,
right.
I mean, you know, they can't do that. That's hostile to their interest, you know.
Yeah, you know, wouldn't it be great fun when NBC conducts one of these phony-ass so-called debates, and they got three of the remaining candidates up there, maybe four. And they have one of those candidates say, well, Tim Russert, you work for NBC, of course, is owned by General Electric, which is one of the biggest defilers of the environment and also one of the biggest killers of human beings on Earth, because GE is one of the biggest, most prominent members of the weapons industry. How do you feel about that, Tim? Can you imagine? Can you imagine a question being tossed back to the so-called moderator by one of these Democrats? A question like that, they'd be talking about it for 10 years, wouldn't they? Huh?
Absolutely. You know,
oh my
people
God.
People have got to be aware. You got to become immediate. We've got to break in. You know, it's now or never. That's what, really what I'm afraid. I mean, we have at least got to see the reality that Congress is there to keep the peace, and until people hit the streets and they start becoming threatened, they're not going to do a damn thing. They are good cop and bad cop. They're there just to keep the peace. So we got to get loud, man. We got to get loud.
We got to get loud. I like that. Jeremy, got to go. Thanks, pal. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. We got to get loud. We got to get loud, yeah. We got a break coming up here. We'll come back to your phone calls when we come back. A lot of you have asked for a copy of this thing, the History of Conservative Obstruction to Progress. And apparently it was written in 03. I'm trying to find the damn thing. As soon as I find it, I will I'll get it out to you. All right? Quick break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. We don't belong. Why must we stay?
It's always gonna be a delicacy. So lift your chops and eat the meat. The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's about 10 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Alan, let's see if Alan, let's see if we get Alan on here now listening in Miami. Alan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry, last time you caught me flipping over a piece of salmon.
Well, that's a good thing to be doing.
You're welcome. You're welcome to have someone.
Oh, man, I love salmon, as long as it's not farm-raised.
Well, I don't know if I did so all this time, then.
Yeah, all right.
Try and find it where you can. I know. A lot of things on your show always get me going, of course. That's why you're there. But you mentioned the thing about curry, and that just sort of put a bunch of things into perspective. What he's doing now is not much different than what he did back then. And I call me conspiracy theorist or whatever, but I thought there was some collusion involved after the Dean scream, and all of a sudden his surge, and then the deal seemed that was cut. I would imagine, if it happened or not, doesn't matter. The backroom deal, that scenario, I would imagine is, you know, you're a soldier and we're at war and you understand, you know, let's have a good fight, but let's not bring up the war and nasty things and so forth. So when he was at the debate, what really blew me away about that was the realization, watching the debates on television, to know that I, little me here, could have done a better job debating George Bush than he could.
Oh my God! And yes,
it scares you, because you could have held up a sheaf of blank papers and pointed to them and said, you know, let me read to you a few things from here and start talking about the forward bases that were going to go in the Mideast and another 9/11 to get the people on board, and say, this is the project for the new American century. What can you tell me about this, sir? He could have talked about Enron. He could have talked about Ken Lay. He could have talked about Abu Ghraib. He could have, and so if you don't use all your ammunition,
Sure.
Are you in a serious battle? I mean, he always said this is the most important election of your life, and then never answered the question why.
That's right.
And I swear till today the Democratic Party has not said why.
Mm-hmm.
And so the concerns I see, you know, now he comes along and does this kind of thing to the one person who walked away from the corporate narrative. And interesting enough, you notice, now even Ralph Nader said during the Iowa caucus that, well, you know, hey, put your money on Evers. Now, a lot of people mistook that as saying that he was backing him all the way, but he was saying, look, here's a person who's electable, who's finally saying a message that makes some sense to people,
right.
that corresponds to stuff that Ralph himself had been fighting for years and years, trying to get people to start a new narrative talking about the place of people versus the place of corporations in our society. They're into education and sports and movies and TV, and now into your phone and into your internet and into your bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as far as I can tell, the primaries right now, up until what we've been seeing, you know, 2 months ago, everybody was like flipping out at how bad things were in the Congress. Boy, can't they stop the war? Can't they stop the funding? What about impeachment? When are they going to stand up? And here we are, less than 2 months later, and everybody's talking about Hillary's tears and Obama's good looks and his call for change. I mean, the narrative has been changed. It's like we've been hypnotized.
That's right.
And so, for what it's worth, and I just like to suggest that if people, you know, every night your show was almost like a debate on issues. Why not broaden our perspective? There's going to be a debate of Green Party candidates this weekend. Now, unfortunately, the TV stations aren't going to cover that, but it'll eventually be available on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And they have as a moderator, one of the moderators is Cindy Sheehan.
Huh.
And Matt Gonzalez, who almost became the mayor of San Francisco. And some of the candidates you may not have heard about before, Jesse Johnson, Kathy Swift, Can't Mess Play, Jared Ball. Some people may have heard of him, who's a communications professor and hip-hop artist in Washington, D.C. But I'm sure everybody's heard of Cynthia McKinney and Ralph Nader.
Mm-hmm.
Now, right. These people are going to be talking about what it could be to talk about this immoral, illegal, and murderous foreign policy, about the trashing of our Constitution and our currency, the criminalization of dissent, media and money control of the whole electoral policy. I mean, you got to ask yourself, why spend all this time and money on these debates other than hypnotizing people? Because they're not talking about the things that are threatening America today.
That's true.
And so I suggest that, you know, I don't know if you ever heard of a film called American Blackout, which discusses this feeling of the 2000, 2004, and probably 2002 elections.
It's I've heard of it.
Cynthia McKinney was featured in it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I know what you're referring to.
Yeah, right. Well, we're going to be showing that film in Miami, for example, on the 19th, Saturday night, and in Fort Lauderdale, the Cinema Paradiso, and Cynthia McKinney is coming, and it'll be an interesting discussion to look at democracy and the vote. And it's an important time to look at it just before the vote. We have to really understand, you know, with all the shenanigans of 2000 and 2004, you got to ask yourself, well, what have we done about it since then? And as you mentioned, that it was not Curry who fought for the vote in Ohio, but you didn't mention that it was the Green Party and the Libertarian Party candidates who asked for a recount.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. You know, my mind sometimes goes like mush. So I knew that it was not the Kerry campaign, Alan. But thanks for the correction. It was the Green Party and who else?
And the Libertarian Party. They came
Party.
Together.
Right.
And they raised, and actually, the Green Party raised a lot of this money in less than a week. Something like $200,000-$300,000 to be able to do this thing. And some of those people are in jail because of some of those looking into that now.
That's right.
And if you don't mind if I mention something like site acgreens.org, where if people want to know anything about that acgreens.org, if they want to find out about that the first ever Green Party public debate, with moderated by Cindy Sheehan, with Ralph Nader, Cynthia McKinney, and four other candidates who are running for the nomination. At least hear what, I mean, the worst case scenario, people come back to your show next week with more interesting stuff to debate.
That's true. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Hey, listen, thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
Got a boogie. Thanks for checking in. Take care, pal. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. You can do it. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. Let's go right back to your phone calls. We're covering an awful lot here tonight, and that's fine with me. I'm frankly kind of overwhelmed with some of the stuff that happened this week. It's just been lunatic week. You know, some clown in the United States Navy tries to single-handedly start a nuclear exchange between the United States, or among the United States, Iran, and Israel. Well, I don't think they have any nuclear weapons. So an attack by the United States and Israel, nuclear attack against Iran, because some jackass in the United States Navy says, "We're coming to you! We're going to explode bombs! Blah, blah, blah." And this, just the craziness. Bush in the Middle East. And, you know, here's the thing that is pretty astonishing to me. I don't know who wrote his script, but he's over there telling the Israelis that they have got to move back to the 1967 borders. Now, this has been the primary, demand from the Palestinian Authority since, what, 1968? It's been there for a long time to move back to those borders. And here's Bush saying, of course, how much longer does he have? He's out of there in less than a year. He's out of the Oval Office in less than a year. Either he goes legally and peacefully, or the American people will put him out. But he's out. So after 7 years of his rabid anti-Palestinian or just total disregard for that situation, except the one issue when Osama bin Laden, before he was murdered, and said, he said, here's what has to happen: the United States has got to get their military out of our holy sites, our Saudi Arabia, which is where the holy sites Medina and Mecca are located, and of course Bush did it. Bush did it. That's one of the reasons for the invasion of Iraq. One of the minor reasons, but one of the reasons nonetheless, to move the U.S. military establishment in the Middle East out of Saudi Arabia into Iraq. Hi. But here's Bush talking about pulling back the Israelis, dismantling all these illegal settlements. Now, he didn't say this, but he's on the same page almost with Jimmy Carter. Bush didn't say this because he didn't understand the word apartheid, but what Carter was talking about, to stop this. Now, obviously, the reason the Israelis are doing what they're doing to the Palestinians is not necessarily because they're racist, hateful sons of bitches. They're doing it because they understand that if they truly are interested in Israel being a democracy for the people who live there and have lived there, then its existence as a Jewish state is over, strictly from a demographic standpoint. There doesn't have to be any bombs blown up on buses in Tel Aviv. There doesn't have to be any missiles flying back and forth. There doesn't have to be checkpoints and razor wire and walls and the kind of apartheid that is perpetrated against the Palestinian people. No, none of that has to happen. All there has to be is a single state, and it ceases existing. It ceases existing as a Jewish state. So the Jews who are there obviously don't want that to happen. Hello? So a two-state solution? It's a nice idea, isn't it? As Bush puts it, Israel and Palestine living side by side with the Iraqis or something. I don't know what the hell he says, but he has the geography scrambled the way George Bush would scramble it. Iraq and Palestine living side by side with the Israeli. I don't know. It doesn't. It really doesn't matter with this jerk. But he is over there. Who's listening to him? No one's listening to him. He has a meeting with Netanyahu, and they decide that it's cool to drop nukes on Iran. Oh, okay, we're with you. At the same time,
perhaps the central issue, well, the second central, the first central issue is why in the hell did the Jews come and take the Palestinians' land to begin with? That's the way it's perceived there, okay? That's the way, and no less than Rabbi Meir Kahana wrote that in his book, They Must Go. He wrote how the Palestinians look at the Jew that comes from Brooklyn and from Kiev and from Johannesburg and from Melbourne and moves into the Palestinians' territory and says, get out, this is ours. You know what that is? That's a blood fight that's going to go on until the last Palestinian or the last Ashkenazi or Sephardic Jew is killed. That's how long it's going to go on. You know it as well as I do. So Bush is talking about, okay, 67 borders. The borders from 1960. Move back. Take apart the settlements that have no business being here as a result of UN resolutions. You know, we talk about nations that ignore UN resolutions. My God, how many resolutions has Israel ignored regarding the Palestinians? But geez, seriously, 100? 90? 300? It just goes on and on and on. So it's very clear that if Israel is to remain a Jewish state, then there will never, ever, ever be a one-state solution, because the demographic bomb, the population bomb of the Palestinian Arabs is such that that country being majority Jewish would end what? In 2 years, 3 years? And if the Palestinian diaspora were, if the right of return were granted to the Palestinians to come back and claim Israeli citizenship or Israel citizenship in Israel, how, excuse me, how long would it take? Not very long. So the leaders of Israel, whether they're warmongering Nazis like Netanyahu or liberals who get gunned down, after giving a speech, it really doesn't matter. I think they're all on the same page where it concerns, no, a two-state solution is the only one, but we're never really going to accede to that because I don't know why. This is one of the reasons I try not to talk about this issue. How do you avoid it, though, when your illustrious leader, Chuckle Nuts Diphthong, is over there talking with Israelis and Palestinians? And I mean, what's he going to do? Show up at Fatah headquarters? Is he going to sit down with Hamas? What is he doing? George Bush doesn't want peace in the Middle East. Jesus God. He wants all-out bloody war because that will help, you know, Jesus to be happy and to come back, you know, and say, oh, look, they're finally killing each other. Okay. When the pile gets up here to this cloud that I'm sitting on, then I will walk down and congratulate George, and then I'll start the Antichrist and the thousand years, Shemek and the Bahama and the Hum and the Hum and the Ay, 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 ay. Ay, ay, ay. But there he is talking about the 1967 borders. Go figure. Go figure. Just too much this week. Too many weird, these weird stories. And this guy from the CIA who can just ring the bell on these clowns in the White House, who is being asked to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee about the destruction of the torture tapes, and he's asking for immunity. Screw that. Don't give him immunity. Tell the son of it. You know, here's another member of the Bush crime family that wants to be let off the hook. You know what they ought to say to this guy? They ought to say, look, here's the deal. You come in and testify in open session or in closed session if it's real secretive stuff. And if you don't, Jose Rodriguez, I believe his name, if you don't do that, then we will jail your ass. We will send the Senate Sergeant of Arms out to your apartment, and he will put you in chains and put your ass someplace where you can be waterboarded? No, really? All right, stick around. Your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Disagree. man flips a switch, all the nuclear will go for me.
Making the pie higher, it's more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Is there really a place in, is it Bethlehem or what city, where in Israel, that is considered to be the actual birthplace of the baby Jesus? You're kidding me. And the reason I bring it up is because the New York Times says Bush went there, too. I mean, what... and then the Sea of Galilee, and all these places where did he go to the was it the Mount of Olives? I don't know. Where was the Sermon on the Mount allegedly held? I can't stand that kind of hypocrisy. Religious hypocrisy to me is just unacceptable, because too many millions of people have died over the history of the human race because of religious hypocrisy. Too many millions of people have been burned at the stake. Too many witches, too many women who were considered to be witches, too many Muslims and Jews in the Spanish Inquisition who were burned and tortured and waterboarded and, you know, on and on and on in the name of this crazy religion. And for Bush to be over there walking around in these places, and, you know, I just wonder what the Israelis think. I wonder what those, the picture was, where did I see the picture? New York Times? Bush is standing there with all these Eastern Orthodox monks or priests or whatever the hell they are, that whose responsibility is to keep the place clean or whatever. And what did I read over the Christmas holiday? That the three different Christian faiths involved, I don't know, what are they, Eastern Orthodox and Coptic Christians and somebody else, and they got into a broom fight over, they're beating each other with push brooms over some argument in the birthplace of the baby Jesus. Did I read that? I think I read that. Did I read that? Oh, my God. I guess I should not let that kind of stuff bother me. I'm talking way too much about myself, but I'm just saying, man, if this stuff, did it bother you? I mean, even if you do believe the Christian theology, okay, fair enough. How did you feel seeing George Bush stomping around on your religious history? Here's a man who, I'm surprised he hasn't, he's called the Constitution a goddamn piece of paper. I'm surprised he hasn't called the Bible a goddamn piece of several pieces of paper because of the peace advocacy in the New Testament. And, you know, his great Lord and Savior is the one who said that the kingdom of heaven was, contain the innocence of little children. Suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. And George Bush is back here in the United States and says, well, we have sick children here? Screw them. I need money for my war. I need money for my death and destruction. Children's health insurance? Nah, I don't think so. Now, excuse me, I have to go over to Jesus' world and stand at the Sea of the Galilee and gaze out and think about my Lord and Savior, who, by the way, said something about little children. It's that kind of hypocrisy. It is galling. It is just mind-scrambling to me. And it just reinforces my deep and utter contempt for organized religion. It really does. Oh, well. Enough about me. Back to your phone calls. David is calling from Indiana, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, David.
Hey, how you doing, brother?
You may be out of Indiana by now. You've been on hold forever.
I'm on U.S. 30 here. But, you know, I'm going to tell you like this, Mike. I'm a Muslim, and, you know, I respect everything you say, because I'm going to tell you one thing. You back everything up with logic, and that's what made you and Mark Thompson y'all two guys, y'all are 1 and 1A. You can put it in whatever order you want to.
Who is he? David?
He is a talk show host on Sirius 146, and he is a black minister. But it's just the logic and the depth of the information, the content of your conversation, which is it's dangerous to people who are adverse to your opinion. And I'm telling you, man, I mean, every day I listen to my show, I beg my brother to listen to you and Mark Thompson, because y'all have so much information, and I want to get the information on some book you have said about the history of conservative obstruction or something, because I have got to get it.
Yeah, the thing I read tonight.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's a list compiled at a website, Conceptual Gorilla, and I have been I've spent the last hour trying to find it, and apparently it's. It's been, you know, it's not an active link anymore. It's driving me crazy. It's called A Short History of Conservative Obstruction to Progress. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do. Our website is being worked on. We're going to have a new website, so I can't post it. And I'm still looking for the link. But if I find the link, somehow I'm going to get it out to folks who wanted it. Hey, David,
okay.
we got
hey,
a,
hey,
yeah, go ahead.
Mike, I'm telling you, you're too deep, man. You got too much knowledge, man. That ain't good. You know that.
No. I'm just a poor wayfaring traveler.
Well, I love your show. I'm going to tell you that.
All right,
no matter what your religion is, I love your show.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it, man. Take care. Drive safely. If you're traveling on Highway 30, US 30, be careful. That's a weird road. We'll be back after the news. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Flying Monkey Right Blues, here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
It's about 26 before the hour here on the Nova M Radio Network, the Mike Malloy Program. Back to your phone calls. Frank is calling from Dandridge, Tennessee, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Good. I'm doing good, man. Hey, look here. I think, you know, when you come out with Bin Laden getting murdered, I went on YouTube and I seen where that's what she said.
Right, right.
And I'm sure it's true. So here's what I think. I think that if it ever gets out in mainstream media on CNN and the MSNBC, I doubt it'll never get on Fox, but anyways, at least done lost his boogeyman. So now he's trying to establish a new boogeyman. That means he's got to have that fear. And this way, he can declare martial law, and he don't have to give up the office. And I think that the guy that come, I'm coming after you, I think he should have done it in Bush's voice. Then it would have took the guesswork out of, and everybody would have known he was a dumbass.
Yeah, right.
And here's something else I want to tell you. Throw a little humor in it.
Okay.
Maybe Jesus would have been born in Washington, D.C., but they couldn't find three wise men or a virgin.
Yeah, right. I think I've heard that.
Well, I had to substitute. We come out West Virginia, but I'll use D.C.
All right. Are you driving somewhere?
Yeah, I'm in Virginia, one up 81.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, what are you hauling tonight?
I don't know. I just got general freight. I don't even know what's in the trailers.
You just hook up.
I think
you just hook up and go.
Yeah, it's already hooked up. I'm a union driver. It's already hooked up. I pull trailers. I don't see what's in it or not.
Yeah.
But I think all he's doing, man, is just he's trying to find another way to scare us. And, plus, he don't have to give up the office. I mean, he made sure that when he first went in office that he could declare martial law, and he don't even have to give it up. Don't even be an election, is the way I gather it.
given what you and I and the rest of America has experienced since Bush took office, is there any way you think this jerk could scare us any further? I don't think so. I think I'm beyond scared now. Anything that happens, it's almost to me like, yeah, well, okay, that figures, because it's the Bush crime family's in control. That's why I make sure that whatever weapons I might have to have, that I might have in my possession, not that I'm saying too much, that they're all in good shape and well oiled, and I've got lots of ammunition.
Oh yeah, yeah. But here's if I don't think he's going to give up office none too easy.
Well,
he's in a power craze, you know that.
A lot of people are suggesting that in the cyber world. Nobody in the real world is suggesting that. I you know, at this point, I would think that even some sociopath like Cheney understands that if they tried something like that, then they will have crossed one bridge too far, and the American people, I think, will rise up and throw the sons of bitches out of Washington. I really believe that. I'm not saying they might not try, but I just don't think that they'll try.
But, Mike, why hasn't the American people done that now? I mean, with...
Because
I mean,
we're
that this man's done, you know,
we're too busy trying to make a living, trying to so many of us have just tuned out. We've just said to hell with it. We said that some time ago. I think we said it when we watched Al Gore concede a stolen election to this pig. I think we went even further when we saw John Kerry in 2004 make all kinds of promises that he wasn't going to quit until the thing was over, until every vote had been counted, and then he turned around and took a vacation. And I think it starts before that. I think the American public has just gotten to the point where we don't vote. We just say to hell with it. It's not our game anymore. It belongs to big money. It belongs to corporations, and they've kind of given up, which I think is a mistake.
Oh, I do too.
Just like Marianne, our Aurora, Illinois bureau chief, when she called, I think it was Marianne who suggested that if we voted in big enough numbers, which seems to be what happened in the 2006 congressional elections, it overrides whatever sneaky ass programming that the conservatives have put into these filthy Diebold machines, and you know, we come out with results that favor the only party in this country. That I'm not talking about the party leadership, but the only party in this country that, to me, I can't say that anymore. I was going to say that makes a lot of sense. The Democratic Party, the leadership of the Democratic Party has so corrupted it. And there are other parties now, the Green Party, that makes more sense than Democrats. Hey, listen, drive safe out there on 81, Frank. Take it easy,
all right,
okay?
Mike, appreciate you, bro. Appreciate
all right, sir. Thank
it.
You.
Thanks,
all right. Take care. Take care. Drive safe. Ray is calling from Safety Harbor, Florida, listening on Sirius. Hey, Ray.
Yeah. Mike, good to talk to you. I've listened to you on 1310 in Dearborn for a long time.
Really?
Till we lost that. And now I got Sirius, and I got Mike Malloy back. So it's very good.
Yeah,
envy your quick wit and fine mind. But I wanted to talk to you about everything you've talked about since I called. And I can't cover the field like you did. I wanted to talk to you about what I consider to be a deliberate snow job. Now, to have a snow job, somebody's going to get snowed, the American people.
Right.
And somebody's going to be doing the snowing. And that's primarily the... corporate elite that run this god darn party system in this country. And so they got together and got Obama a win. And in doing that, he was pitted against Hillary, and he becomes a candidate of change. Now, the change that he represents is a slight change of perhaps suntan or something, but other than that, his voice and his voting and his practices and Hillary's have been similar enough that the elite wouldn't be scared of either one of them, and they're the backside of the Republican Party coin, which Bill approved. Okay?
Yeah.
But now we run the snow job.
Yeah.
We tell the American people, oh, here's a candidate of change. And I didn't, you know, I wasn't really paying too much attention. I was listening to Sirius Radio and a couple of others during the day. And then in the late afternoon, a Sirius commentator comes on, and he's in love with this man. And the real candidate of change, John Edwards, or the genuine candidate of change, Kucinich, are forgotten.
That's true.
It's like, oh, they didn't exist, but that's okay, because now we've got a race going on in the Democratic Party between a candidate of, the old school Hillary, and a candidate of change, Obama. And that's a snow job. That's a snow job on the American people. It's a snow job that rests on the structure of the Electoral College that prevents us from having proportional representation in the,
right,
this country, and where Edwards would be in another party and Kucinich in another, and they would be getting proportional votes.
Mm-hmm.
And we lose sight of that. I think you're a good guy to hit on that every so often. Fine. I'll get off of this hobby horse at the moment.
Okay.
You know that we have this I'm going to stop there. I think I'll just stop there. Well, I was going to go ahead and talk some more about why we don't have a multiple-party system.
Well, I think you've covered it pretty well,
yeah,
Ray,
and
also I think a lot of times that's been covered. The one part of your comments that I think I like the most, though, is the bit about, you know, the only change that Obama might represent has to do with the suntan. Ow! All right, then. Is it time for a break? We're coming up pretty quick here. Let's get Paula on. She's calling from Bayonne, New Jersey. Hey, Paula, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Hanging in there. I'm hanging out with my friends on the Truth Seeker thread at Democratic Underground.
Well, hello to everybody.
We love listening to you every night, and we're here every night.
Thank you.
For diehards. What was I going to say? You know, everything that's happened this week. First of all, Bush on his Jesus Christ stupid star tour of the Mideast. What the hell is that? I mean, come on, he said something really stupid today that we should have bombed Auschwitz.
Yeah. Hey, hold on a second.
Okay.
Let me put you on hold. We got to do some commercials, and we'll come right back after the break and continue the conversation with Paul in Bayonne, New Jersey. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Just a little bit more of the agony tonight, and then we have a weekend. This is NOVAM Radio. Ian Hoff, who engineered and answered your calls at our flagship station in Phoenix, KPHX, and he did that all week. Billy Foster, our technical director. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. And Catherine Bay, who is our executive producer.
This is the Jesus Christ Superstar Tour. All right, back to Bayonne, New Jersey, where we're talking with Paula, who's listening on the Internet. Where were we, Paula?
I think we left off at Jesus Christ Superstar and Bush bombing Auschwitz.
That was it. Now, the way I get it, he went to Auschwitz, where I question why he was there, since his grandfather more or less helped finance Auschwitz. But he's in Auschwitz saying that he probably agrees, or not, I'm sorry, he wasn't at Auschwitz. What am I talking about? He was at a memorial for the Holocaust dead. I keep forgetting he's in Israel. It just doesn't compute to me. But he made the statement that Auschwitz probably should have been bombed by the Allies. Now, I don't know how that idea. I know there were some Jewish advocates who wanted that to happen, but I think they were in the minority, if I remember the history, because an awful lot of innocent people, well, I guess a lot of innocent people died anyway, right?
Yeah, but, you know, to blow them up, I mean, he should have said, you know what I mean? Like, he could have said we should have opened our borders and accepted.
Well, that's the thing. See, the hypocrisy here once again, I think most people who understand history, especially just prior to World War II, understand that boatload after boatload of Jews tried to escape and were turned back, were forced to go back and face their own execution. The boat that sat off the coast of Cuba for 2 months or however long it was because Roosevelt refused to allow them into the country. I mean, it's such a twisted history, and so few Americans are aware of this. I know people in the Jewish community are, but so few non-Jewish Americans understand the way we turned our back and just said, they're Jews. Who cares?
You know, we can't have any more of them here, any more of them people. We have enough.
That's right.
It's just,
yeah.
It's just ridiculous. And what I don't understand, I mean, the man is irrelevant at this point.
You would think. I just wish he would sit down and shut up before he pushes the wrong button and we find ourselves in World War XII or whatever.
Yeah, we could just give him a toy, give him a new, like, PlayStation or something, a Game Boy, and put him in a corner. And just say, sit down and shut up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, even if, like, we won't impeach you if you just shut up. Don't open your mouth, you moron. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And why aren't, I mean, the Republican Party is on its deathbed right now.
Well, yeah, but we have, the Republican Party is sometimes like Lazarus. It has made more comebacks than Lazarus, that's for sure.
No, that's because the Democrats, you know what I mean, instead of being like Van Helsing,
Well, the Democrats have the uncanny ability to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory over and over and over again. If they do it this time, we're doomed.
And that's why, you know what, and that's what's kind of annoying me about the whole thing that's going on with John Edwards. Because at least he has some fire in his belly.
Yeah.
He's not talking about compromise. He's not talking about reaching across the aisle. The only thing they should be reaching across the aisle to do is to punch him in the face.
Well, or serve him with a subpoena.
You know, and he's the only one. And they've been trying to push the man out of the race since the beginning. Remember when they announced that his wife's cancer was back?
Yeah.
And the first reports were, oh, he's dropping out. Edward's gone. He's dropping out of the race. And isn't it sad his wife has cancer? And then when he said no, they beat him up for it.
Right, right, right.
I mean, it's just so frustrating. Like, do they really? I mean, can they be so blind as to see that they don't have a chance to do to conservatism and republicanism what was done to liberalism and the Democratic Party? Although, you know what I mean? 30 years ago, don't they see that?
Yeah. I understand. I hear you.
I'm sorry. I just needed to vent because it's really got me frustrated.
Well, not just you. Not just you. Paula, listen, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, all right?
Thanks, Mike. You have a good weekend.
Okay, you too. Take care. Take care. I understand that frustration, sure. I take baths in that frustration. Robert is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Robert.
Hello, Mike. I noticed something that no one, I've seen no one on the Internet or anywhere remark upon this yet. I was amazed in that ABC debate with Charles Gibson or Charlie Gibson, depending on what he feels like that day, Charlie or Charles. He does a debate with the Republicans and immediately afterward, the same night, with the Democrats. Well, the opening line of questioning, only to the Democrats, he didn't ever say this to the Republicans, the opening line of questioning was this little phony presentation. Supposedly, experts say there's a 30 to 50% chance in the next few years when you're president that we're going to be attacked by nuclear terrorism from a little group like Al-Qaeda, you know, not from a nation. And, of course, that's phony. I haven't read that since 1980. The next few years it's going to happen. This is one of these defeatist scenarios they're setting up for the Democrats. So his question is, if you're president, then when we're attacked by the terrorist, it was nuclear, an American city, a nuclear bomb in an American city, what will you do the next day? What will be your... I'm kidding. And this is unbelievable.
Try to find a doctor.
Well, I mean, this is unbelievable that he sets him up to put in the mind of the American people. I mean, I knew
Charlie Gibson asked that question. Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And it's, I mean, let's put it this way. He phrased it slightly differently than I said, but that was what he said. He didn't say, what would you do to stop it? He said, after it happens, if it happened, then you're the president, and it happened, and after it happened, what will you do the next day? In other words, rather than say, you know, saying the Democrats can't prepare for it, this is the underlying message, you can't prepare for it to stop it.
Yeah, I hear you, Robert. Hey, listen, Robert, I got to leave it there, pal, because we are flat out of time. Thanks, Robert. I appreciate you checking in. Hey, do have a great weekend, okay? Take care. Take care. I'll see you Monday. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Keep it lit. Keep it lit. Oh, yeah. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.